a sign of things to come. Yeah, it almost seemed like that particular cart needed a little bit of help. Anyway, good evening, valued shortwave listeners. It's time for another broadcast from Radio Timtron Worldwide. For November the 15th, we are halfway through the month. The year of our Lord, 2014. Last weekend, I was all prepped to do a really hot radio show. And I had no internet connection. I had everything ready to go. And it died. I was, to put it in my own words, yellified. Yes, I wasn't very happy at all. Well, when I got the internet back, I decided to peruse my emails, something that I haven't done for a while. And there was one from my good friend, Paul Wolcott, W2JTD, that's jingling, tingling, dingleberries. And the message was very brief. Our good friend and mentor, Bill Nagel, W3DUQ, had passed away Friday, just slightly over a week ago. Kind of hit me like a ton of brick. Yep. So what can I say? Tonight's broadcast will be in remembrance of Uncle Willie, W3DUQ. I have a number of, I don't know if you could call them interviews, but just friends of mine that have been very much influenced by Uncle Willie way back when. So there will be a certain amount of music, because music is what a certain amount of it was all about. His influence on me as a young Johnny novice was rather profound, to say the least. So this evening I'm celebrating here as I raise a glass of red stuff to Uncle Willie. Well, the one thing about time is it marches on, and so does the weather. People come, people go. Music comes, music goes. But the weather is what keeps going on, and the beat does go on, for sure. Well, my various early remembrance of Bill was way back then on a hot August night in 1966. My new passion was amateur radio. Although I did not have a license back then, you had to take a Morse code examination along with the theory examination. And theory was no problem, because that's what my passion was about, but Morse code was another thing. I struggled hard. And like many people, I said, screw it. I'm going on the air without a license. I'm becoming a boot. So I became a boot. I flipped my call letters as a pirate station around. I had the call letters of WXNZ, and I was going to be W1XNZ. But there was no W1XNZ, because X denoted an experimental station. So I became W1NXZ. Bob from Beverly first transmitter, which I used for pirate work, I'd made into an amateur transmitter. It was known as the Crapbox 40, which survived the fire of 92. It's in rough shape, but it lives, and one of these days I'll resurrect it. But that was my means of reaching out and touching people out there in radio land. Well, it was late at night on that hot August night. On a Saturday night, I was tuning around. And I heard these two stations in Pennsylvania. Dave, K3ZRF, who is unfortunately not with us, one of the coolest guys on the planet. And Bill, W3DUQ. I mean, these guys breathe life and interest and excitement. And I tried valiantly to break in, but my piss-weak little, I don't know, 25 watts or so, and the rectangle loop antenna just didn't have much of a signal. I tried and tried and tried. Finally, when they signed at around 1:30 or 2 in the morning, I was able to snag Dave. And he heard me, but just barely. Well, in time, I got my general class amateur radio license and got on the air in September of 1967. Well, I have family scattered around here and there, and family in Pennsylvania in the area where nearby where Bill lived. Bill lived in Honeybrook, Pennsylvania, and he moved to a little tiny fly speck place known as Icedale, which was attached to Honeybrook. Yep, it's all built up now, but back then, you know, it was God's country. Yes, it was. And at that point in time, I really wanted to get to know him. And I remember when I was visiting my cousin, you see, anything out of town was a toll call. So I couldn't just call the guy. So I must have chewed his ear off, just like people chew my ear off about incidental bullshit. I chewed Uncle Willie's ear off, and he just stood there and took it. Well, back then I had my technician license in the summer of 67. I brought an amateur station along in a trunk for 6 meters, knocked down beam, and it was truly stuff that I put together for no money at all. And my cousin lived in Coatesville, Pennsylvania, in a very high spot. So I was on the air. And then towards the end of the trip, Now, if I can get this right, my cousin's father's sister had a son who's also a ham. Joe Fell, W3GMS. So there's a very, very distant connection there. So I was told, hey, you want to meet Joe? He's in the ham radio. So I went for a little ride with my cousin and his father in the Mustang convertible. Yes, the Rustang convertible. Man, it was fun cruising down the highways and byways of our land from 30th Street Station. I think that was it. Or was it Penn Station? Whatever. But anyway, it was in Philadelphia. It had quite the ride. Yes, quite the ride indeed. Well, what can I say? It was exhilarating. I went and met Joe later on. And he had this little ham shack that was picture perfect. And on the table, you know, I was saying to myself, some guy that's going to have a plug-in shoebox appliance transmitter. Back then, the Japanese manufacturers had not crashed in on our shores. Maybe it was a swine. Maybe it was a drake. Maybe it was a heap shit SB series. Nope. It was a little heap shit DX60 and an HR10 receiver and a crapstool for $38.68. That's where everybody hung out. And he turned it on. And there it was. I think he was just a novice then. Well, I was excited. It was great to meet Joe. Joe will be reminiscing here later on in this broadcast. So we go back to 1966 again. We go back a year as I'm going to be bumping around here as I'm making a ridiculously long-winded one-way old buzzer transmission through the auspices of WBCQ. This evening we are quadricasting on 5110, 7490, 9330, and 15.420, plus streaming out on the internet at WBCQ.com. Man, we are worldwide on the channel tonight. Let me tell you, Mr. Man, we are worldwide. Just thinking about it gives me goosebumps. But anyway, as a beginning radio amateur person, even though I didn't have a license, I did a fair amount of listening. And what was the big hush-hush talk was this pirate station that was showing up on 75 meters, which called itself WRFH, Radio Free Harlem. 3868 on your radio dial, here and there. It was hosted by a man named Rex, who had a very unusual voice. This guy didn't have three balls, he had four. Yes, he had four BAs. And I remember one night hearing the station come on the air. Through all the noise and the garbage, it was there. I was like, wow, I'm hearing my first pirate station on shortwave. I was so excited. It was actually medium wave by true definition. But then another phenomena started. What was known as a music QSO. Now, the playing of music is strictly verboten in amateur radio. But people with the big heavy metal transmitters and the big signals would sometimes strut their stuff and whip out a tune or two. Well, I was in my middle teenage years in the summer. My mother let me stay up as late as I wanted to. And Saturday nights were a very special night. Yes, Bill had this creature that he talked to, known as Boris, in the basement, with reverb and echo and all that kind of thing, and he was really into the monster flicks and the sci-fi stuff, and in the Boston areas, there were in many parts of the country, various TV stations here and there had their own grade B movie sci-fi and horror shows on Saturday night. In the Boston area, it was Fantasmic Features, hosted by this guy named Feep, F-E-E-P, who had a beak that kind of, his mouthpiece looked like that of a candlestick telephonium. I remember that voice.
Hello there. This is Feep. And on tonight's show, we are going to be featuring Forbidden Planet.
So I had the old black and white Philco 21-inch TV set that was in a metal box. it was a set that was put out by the Curb for collection, and I took it home and I repaired it, and that was my bedroom TV set. And I sat there transfixed to the screen watching that show. And after Fantasmic Features, I forget what the title of what it was that followed thereafter, but it was another monster or sci-fi flick. You know, Mothra. You know, films that were made in Japan with the English dubbed in, you know, to where the movements of the mouths of the actresses and actors didn't necessarily follow what was being heard. But by my bedside sat a bedside radio. I decided to move everything that had to do with radio, be it pirate or radio or audio, tape machine, all that. Well, no, I kept the tape machine up there and a speaker system. But down below in the basement, I had all my radio equipment set up except for one receiver. I had this wooden cabinet Philco All-American 5 set with Loctel tubes that came from my grandmother's sister. And I modified it. I took the loop antenna, I just disconnected it. And I kind of wound up a coil and stuck it in there, and I pulled the oscillator coil out and just kind of guesstimated how many turns to throw on the thing and popped that back in, and voila! I had a radio that received 75 and 40 meters. I had that hooked up to a little piece of wire, an FPW, a friggin' piece of wire antenna. And I would listen into the goings-on. And at midnight, you know, things would settle down. And a carrier would come up, boom, silencing the frequency. And you'd hear the national anthem. The national anthem would play, and various old buzzards would get bent out of shape. There's music, we must jam it. But fortunately, their signals were weak compared. So what can I say? This tune blasted forth.
I'm
carrier would drop. There'd be little static crashes. And then another carrier comes on. And another soon song busts through the static. Fran Little is W3SCC broadcast engineer, and a longtime friend of Bill Nagel, W3DUQ. How long have you known Bill? When did you meet up with him?
I met Bill, I think, up at Harry Davis's place in the late 60s. W3FDY used to have a ham shack up on the top of the hill up at Gap, Pennsylvania, and everybody used to congregate up there. And I think Bill was one of the people that was originally up there with the crew, and I met him, and we had some fun, and that was the beginning of it all.
So I remember meeting you in 1967 in November, okay. In a rather strange way.
Oh, yeah? I don't recall that particular meeting.
Well, Bill had a sign-off party when he lost his license for a year.
Uh-huh.
And then the power went out.
The power went out?
Yes, it did.
And then I have anything to do with me pulling the electric meter out?
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
There
makes
was
some sense now.
Lots of miscreancy that went on back then.
Oh, it was a party for sure.
Yep. Now, Bill will long be remembered. That's
absolutely.
For sure.
I still can't believe it happened.
I know.
Didn't realize his health was that bad.
Well, I didn't either. I had talked with him a number of times in the place where he was at, and it was looking like if he got better, he'd get out. But he never did.
Yeah, that's a shame. Well, we'll always remember the fun we had with him anyway.
Okay. What do you remember about his part? How many of his parties did you attend? A few?
Actually, I didn't really attend that many parties. I would come up there, the guys would be hanging out, and I was just traveling with my friends, you know. We'd come up in the car and crash the thing. But I really wasn't actually at the parties. I mean, I didn't get up that often. I mean, it was a couple-hour drive for me to get up there, and I really only went up three or four times, I guess.
Wow.
I mean, okay. To see Bill, and then, well, we were up to Harry's place a couple other times.
All right. Well, I appreciate you spending a little bit of time here with our microphoniums and telephoniums.
Oh, I'm glad we got to talk. Yeah.
All right, Fran.
Okay, Tim. Well, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for spending the time here.
All right.
And have a good evening.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Well, back then at that time frame when Bill's electric meter got yanked. Yeah, there was a lot of practical joking going on and whatnot. But with the music playing, which happened on a every weekend, and I would just stay up late listening to like up to 2, maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning when they finally hang it up. It was all kinds of good crank and greaser 50s oldies. Not the wimpy shit, but good tunage, upbeat, party, energy. And I really, it was the kind of oldies radio that just did not even exist. Well, all good things come to an end, you know. Basically, the FEC received a number of complaints about the music. And eventually, they staked out the situation. The two miscreants involved were Bill, W3DUQ, and Dave, K3ZRF. Well, the feces showed up and nailed Bill. They didn't get Dave, but they got Bill. His license got yanked for a year. They took it away. So we had a sign-off party. Yep. In November. Damn. That was this month. And I'm trying to think of, see, 1967 till now. Man. Mmm. In 3 years from now, that will have been 50 years. 50 years. 50 years. Man, the passing of time. Have some red stuff. Boy, that really does make you feel like an... buzzard, for sure. Well, a lot of people were invited, including little old me. I'd only had my ham license for a couple months. I was kind of a Johnny novice, you know. You know how it is. Yeah, I was growing hair on my face and hair on my nutsack. But very unaware of a lot of things. So, I saddled up the metal dinosaur. And got a ride to, believe it was Coatesville, Pennsylvania. And I was met by a guy whose name is Jesse. K3GKB. Who is a very bizarre and interesting character. He's still around. I've kind of had peripheral contact with him. But he was the one that was behind WRFH. You see, he worked as an intern at WBAI, the Pacifica station in New York. And there was a strike going on. And he had a number of tapes of the Reverend Adam Clay Powell. And I understand they kind of showed up on 75. But that was a genesis for this very interesting pirate. Just a postscript is, one time visiting Bill, found his reel-to-reel tapes, and in it was, maybe it was the master tape of one of the RFH broadcasts. And I made a dupe of it. Back in the days when I was involved with Radio Clandestine, I also aired WRFH on the 49-meter band. This is like back in the 80s. Way back. Unfortunately, that being, to my knowledge, the only surviving recording tape of WRFH has been destroyed by the fire of 92, only to be preserved in memory. Unless there is a copy of it floating around somewhere out there in the ether. Well, anyway, Jesse met me. I think there were a couple of others with me, or we all just kind of accrued at the same time from different directions at the Metal Dinosaur Station. And Jesse had this Oldsmobile. And the thing was piss beaten. Yes, it was piss beaten. And he had a, I remember he had a mobile rig. It was an SBE 34. Little tiny thing, you know, was ahead of its time. He'd be on there,
K3GKB, mobile.
And he was in touch with the mother ship. Meanwhile, the transmission clutch is slipping. And he'd really wail on it. And that engine would be winding up. And the transmission was burning. You could smell the hot transmission oil in the air. And he'd be hurtling in the downhill part. And then he'd come up, because Pennsylvania's got lots of rolling hills. And the thing would be struggling to make it up the next hill. And by the grace of God, We made it to Bill's. Man, I was awestruck. All these people there, people I'd talked to on 75 from Long Island and Jersey and Pennsylvania. Yep. And there was Bill's sound system, which he built the amplifier and the low end of it, the bass reflex cabs, pair of 12s, one in each cabinet, the AR2As that sat on top of it, the TV set in the middle, and the color organs. I think those were a later thing, but I'll be progressing onward with a story about Uncle Willie's color organs and remembrance of those color organs and the New Year's Eve party I went to. Yes, indeed. So I was up till all hours, as was everybody else. And everybody was having a good time. Blah. And there's a photo that was taken, the infamous Christmas card. And it was, it was fashionable to have organizations like, you had the NAACP, the National Association of Colored People. Well, we had the NAAM, the National Association for the Advancement of Amplitude Modulation, which at that particular point in time, in amateur radio, it's so inefficient. You should go sideband like everybody else. What's the matter with you? People, by and large, didn't care about audio quality. It's just whether or not they're being heard. But then again, if the signal is big and you can hear each other, why sound like crap? AM is so much more simpler to generate and make sound good than sideband. There's a lot less going on. It's a basic mode of communications. That's what it is. No, it doesn't have the efficiency of sideband, but who gives a shit? It's amateur radio, for Christ's sake, you know? So that was the mindset of all of us, and still is to this day. Now, Bill had a lot of interesting equipment. He had a heap shit Apache in which he had an external modulator with a pair of 4CX300s. And he put TV sweet tubes in the PA. And he had what was referred to as an upside-down tube. It was nothing more than a high-level balanced modulator making double sideband. If you exceeded 100% negative with a standard AM envelope, you start going into double sideband. And unlike a regular old AM signal where if you overmodulate, you clip and splatter and distort, with inserted carrier, double sideband shows, so to speak, you just got louder and louder and louder and more obnoxious and louder. No, it didn't necessarily sound good on an AM radio. You had to use a synchronous detector. And while I'm lingering on the synchronous detector, for those of you out there in radio land, this broadcast is quadricasted on 5110, 7490, 9330, and 15.420. All except for 7490, which is a true full carrier double sideband AM signal. The others are all upper sideband with carrier. So if you possess the ability to use synchronous detection on your modern shortwave radio, or if you have what is commonly referred to as a flex radio, they do a real good job with synchronous detection. I mean, that's what you do. You just go into the sync mode and go to upper sideband, and there you are. We'll sound bigger and better and fuller than ever, you know? But Uncle Willie was on the forefront. He built a sync detector using vacuum tubes. I remember it had the famous RCA 7360 beam deflection tube. And he did an article on in 73 Magazine, which will be announced a little later as far as how to access it. Yes, he was ahead of his time. And the output of that heap-shit Apache chassis was looking into a homemade amplifier. They used a pair of tubes that were referred to as 4-1250s. Well, I never heard of such a thing. That's a European nomenclature. Well, back in the day, the Amprex company, maybe they were, they were quite the movers and shakers in their own right, you know. Here in the U.S., it was always iMac this and iMac that. They were the dominant force of hollow-state amplification of high power. You had RCA, they had their own philosophies, and then you had Amprex. Well, Amprex, being European, imbued some interesting technology. They basically took the 833, repackaged it, and put in a smaller glass envelope, which the pins lined up and were the same size, where you could drop it into a 4-1000 type socket. Medium U triode, very bulletproof, used in induction heating equipment. Uncle Willie was working for a company that built that equipment. So he got a pair of tubes and he big-ass UTC's commercial-grade series plate transformer. I mean, the thing was a monster. I think it was a CG310, you know, 4,000 volts is what it was capable of. And that sat in the trailer trash closet, you know, with the metal doors in his end ham shack at his trailer in Icedale, Pennsylvania. And below the amplifier, which was rack-mounted, about a half-size, you know, rack that would probably, like, 40 inches high or whatever, there was this big-ass variac and various tape marks on the panel as to where to set the thing. Another thing that Bill had was he was probably one of the few guys that had the earliest of audio processing gear. Back then, solid-state audio processing gear was starting to happen. I think CBS Laboratories had the Volumax and the Automax. I think they were solid-state by then. But by and large, most broadcast stations used vacuum tube processing gear. You know, there's the fabled Gates stay level. And they all used a particular type of tube. I believe it was called a 6336 or something like that. But what sets it apart is it was a variable mu triode, which means as the control feedback voltage is applied to it, the gain goes down more in a linear function, so it makes a good compressor. So that's what the Unilevel was, and Bill built one. The Unilevel, trademark of the Generous Electric Company. Yes, all these manufacturers had their own brands of processors with their own little cutesy names, just as today, you know, designer drugs that you see advertised on TV, you know, with cutesy names. Well, I'm not going to go there. You know, that'll be another show where we here at Radio Timtron Worldwide will pick on weird names for cars that have nothing to do with what they are, and bizarre names for designer drugs that may have some very nasty side effects. But anyway, I digress. Yes, Uncle Willie's sign-off party. You know, I still have that card, because after the party, everybody that went received a Christmas card, which was a photo of a group shot of everybody that was there. Yep, you see Uncle Willie in there near the center. I'm way off at one end in an army jacket. Yeah, that was a cool thing to wear back then, was an army jacket. I had semi-longish hair. I was wearing an army jacket. And some sideburned action. And that was it. No beard, no stash, you know. Yes, the mustache, also known as a womb broom. But anyway, as we're rolling along here, what can I say? I fired up the 811 ring. Yes, known smoking a marijuana cigarette. Yup. Yup. It was all new. It was all exciting. Yeah. Just thinking back to those days. Indeed. While you hear the rain, the tranquility of nature wending its way through this broadcast. Yep. And then the quantity of beer that was consumed. So I was just really wiped out. And you know something? That photo exists. And if I have it, I'm going to see if I can scan it. And then maybe, just maybe, put it on the BCQ website. You know, photographic moments are a very precious thing, at least to those that remember. But you know the sad thing about it? When we all pass, those people in the future will say, "Who gives a shit?" But at the time, it was very significant. And then again, there was the music. Ah, yeah. The music that just played from his stereo. Like this tune here from Donovan. Mellow Yellow.
Just mad about saffron. Oh, saffron's mad about me. I'm just mad about saffron. She's just mad about me. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow, quite rightly. They call me Mellow Yellow. We'll be right back. They call me Mellow Yellow.
Right, right.
They call me Mellow Yellow.
Telephonium right now is Mr. Kevin Strom, WB4AIO. And Kevin, how was Bill influential in your beginning years in amateur radio or just life in general?
Well, I first heard Bill W3DUQ when I was 12 years old and first getting interested in shortwave radio. It was about 1968. And I listened to him from the age of 12 up until I got my own amateur radio license, my advanced license in 1973, and was able to actually talk to him. So from the age of 12 to 17, I was a regular SWL to Bill's fun activities on 75 meters and his more serious stuff like his FutureNet.
Yes, his FutureNet.
On 3870 and on Sunday afternoons.
How would you describe the FutureNet?
Well, the FutureNet was really an extension of Bill's interest in science and the paranormal, and he took on a lot of the more interesting and unusual ideas that you might call the alternative science community was interested in. What really impressed me about Bill, besides his technical expertise, he had a great signal. He had the kind of amateur radio station I dreamed about having. It sounded better than a broadcast station, but beyond just the technical expertise, Bill was a guy who thought for himself. He didn't think in the normal channels. He didn't just accept the commonly accepted view. I mean, when he found out about, for example, Wilhelm Reich and orgone accumulators, he wasn't like a typical, you know, scientific skeptic and said, oh, that's nonsense, and just dismissed it. But he also wasn't like a true believer who said, oh, it's just a bunch, you know, it's all true. I believe everything Reich says. No. Bill was a guy who built an orgone accumulator for himself to test it out. He did other experiments, too. And he was able to take really controversial ideas, ideas about UFOs, ideas about extrasensory perception, about paranormal activity, and he could make you think about those things in a new way. And he could present those ideas in a calm, reasoned, logical manner. I mean, it was more than just calm, reasoned, and logical, though. The guy had a certain charisma, and he could draw you into his thought processes, and I really admired that. Yeah, I didn't always agree with his ideas. Sometimes I thought they were kind of out there, but he could draw you in, and he was also a gentleman. He would respect you, even if you didn't agree with him. He was a really interesting human being.
Yes, indeed he was. That's for sure, and that's what the show is all about.
Well, I'm very happy you are honoring his life.
Well,
he deserves it very
he
much.
Does. He does. That's for sure.
And you know, I have a feeling, Tim, that somewhere out there, he's looking down on us.
I would like to think that. I would like to think that. But you never know.
You never know. The world is a stranger place than we think it is.
Yes, it is.
Bill Nagel, W3DUQ, was a man who taught me that.
And he taught me that, too. Anyway, Kevin, you have any more words of wisdom before we move on to the next item here?
Well, I would just like to say that that Bill Nagel also was a man who was influential in me wanting to get my amateur radio license and also pushing my thinking more toward becoming an AMer than any other mode of operation, because he, at a time when AM was being abandoned by all the institutions of amateur radio, by the manufacturers, by the ARRL, he continued to be devoted to the cause of high fidelity AM, and not only high fidelity AM, but highly effective AM operation on the amateur bands. And you know what? He was almost all alone, along with you and maybe a few dozen other guys at the time in the late 60s, early 70s. But you know what? He's been vindicated. AM has not only survived, but it's prospered, and it's gone high tech, and it's better than ever. And W3DUQ had a lot to do with that.
That he did. Well, thank you for your time, Kevin.
Thank you, Tim. And I'm really looking forward to hearing the rest of the program.
Well, we're on tonight from 7 till 9 p.m. on all four BCQ frequencies and streaming at WBCQ.com.
Excellent. Well,
all
great
right.
Great to talk to you.
Good to talk with you, man. Have a good night.
73. Bye.
Bye. Well, now we go through the halfway mark. Yes, kick me through the goalpost of life, ladies and gentlemen out there in Radio Land. For it's a continuation of the Uncle Willie Memorial happening here on WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. A member station of Farts, the first. First Amendment Radio Transmitting Society. And we're quadricasting tonight, Area 51 at 5110 kilohertz, 7490, our standard AM service, 9330, and 15.420. Another hour of fun games and, well, I don't know about fun games and entertainment, but at any rate, it's honoring Uncle Willie. Yep, he was very much about proving extraterrestrials out there in radio land. Yes, extraterrestrials, UFO beings, whatever you want to call them. They were very much a focal point. And it's something to think about. Yes, we are not alone. I basically believe very much in what he had to say. He was really ahead of his time. Really, we'll be missing him. You know, there's enough material here to do two shows. So with the first installment, I'll see what I can do. And the second installment, who knows? Tune in right now from Klaatu.
and transmit thought energy far beyond the norm.
We could all learn to get along with each other. Yep. The frailties of humanity. Man's inhumanity to man. I'm just taking editorial license. Yeah, I wonder if those occupants could fix the planet problems here on Earth. W3DUQ's passed away this Friday, a little over a week ago. I wonder if he is looking down on us all. Is going to take us away. And you know something? Yeah. This is what happens when you consume a certain amount of rich stuff. You gotta drain your log, you know? We'll be right back. telephonium, I have Mr. Mark Ryan, WA1FAF, affectionately known as The Faff. Now, years ago, The Faff and I went down to Bill's place, known as Uncle Willie, for a New Year's Eve party, 1969 into 1970. And it was a growing time for both of us. So, Mark, welcome on into Radio Timtron Worldwide.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Timmy.
Well, good to talk to you. What do you remember? What are the points of memory of this fantastic journey when you saddled up your mother's car and I headed out with you? I forget whether I talked you into coming and picking me up. Or if you, or if I took the train, affectionately known as the Metal Dinosaur, into Boston and wound up in Belmont, Mass., where you were living at the time.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that detail, but I do remember that that you and Bill Nagel invited me down, and it would have been the first lengthy road trip that I had taken from New England, and he was. What, about 6 to 7 hours away, and I was 18 years old and led a pretty sheltered life, and I looked forward to the adventure, looked forward to meeting him. Bill was certainly a big-time personality on the radio those days. You know, he had a big signal and a nice-sounding radio and a booming broadcast-quality voice. And the thing that I remembered most about Bill before I went down there is, even though he was about 11 years older than me, I never felt like he treated me like a kid. I felt like he treated me like an equal. So I thought, well, you know, this is going to be something. I have nothing else planned on New Year's Eve, and we certainly have enjoyed a lot of New Year's Eves together since, Timmy. But that was quite an adventure, and my first long drive. I'm glad you took it with me.
Yes, I'm glad I did too. It's one of those memories that I'll have for the rest of my life. What I remember is certain mind altering substances that were ingested, and how we really got into music.
Well, Bill had a tremendous stereo system for the day, and I believe he had AR-3A speakers.
I think those were AR-2As, and they were sitting on top of some homemade 12-inch woofers and bass reflex cabinets.
Oh, okay. definitely big sound.
Oh, yeah.
Thunderous bass. And he just had, at that time, I believe it was just like a 12x60 mobile home he was living in, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was about that size, a 12x60.
Yeah, so here's this, you know, monstrous stereo system in this very small metal building. And, the volume and the quality was tremendous. And of course, he built these color organs. So on each speaker, there was this box with different colored lights that would blink to the sound of to the different frequencies of the music.
Yep.
There'd be a light for bass and a light for treble and a light for mid-range. And I had never seen anything like that. There were a lot of things I had never seen before, but Bill knew how to throw a party, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Well, one thing I remember is a tank full of tropical fish, and trying to do a mind lock on the fish. Or another thing was the TV set being turned on, but no audio, and how some of the programming would follow along with what was playing.
Oh yeah, the music or whatever would seem to fit the TV show. I think we even were watching some cartoons. Or
yes,
something. It was pretty unusual stuff on the stereo. Yeah, he was kind of ahead of his time back in those days, and it was certainly I certainly learned a lot over the course of that day and night, and discovered some new and different things. But mostly, what I got out of remembering that time with Bill was was I felt like I was finally growing up for once. You know, that here I am, maybe I really am an adult. Maybe I can really make adult decisions and do adult things. And, you know, he really made me feel at home, which meant a lot to me because I had spent very few, you know, I had not spent very many nights away from home and up until that point. I think I had stayed at your place up in Rockport a couple of times and, you know, a couple of other places. But here I was 6 or 7 hours from home, and I got to admit, I was a little nervous and I was definitely out of my element. But, you know, I think back to that night, and Mark Connolly, Mark W-A-1-I-O-N, and I went and visited Bill on a couple of other occasions in the early 70s, and though it might not have been quite as dramatic event as that one on New Year's Eve that you and I went to, I always felt the same way when I left. He was a guy that treated me well, made it clear that, you know, he was happy to see me, and you know, anytime I talked to him on the air, and I did for many, many years after that, he was always glad to hear from me, and it was amazing his breadth of knowledge involving so many different subjects, whether it would be high-end audio or science fiction or maybe even some of the science fiction he thought was science fact, people from other planets visiting us and other stuff that I didn't quite grasp, but he was certain about. He was like no other, a unique character to be sure.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Boy, I'm just thinking back on everything, and there's just too many details to even think about or mention, but I will be covering a few of my own on this broadcast, or maybe I will have already covered them by the time I air your thoughts and reflections here. So maybe you'll be tuned in tonight.
It's certainly sad to think of our compatriots passing away as, you know, we ourselves start to turn into old buzzards, especially you, Timmy.
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't even mention it.
We can think back to some of the many friends that we've made over time. Thankfully, most of them are alive and well and doing just fine, even if they're not on the radio. But, you know, Bill Nagel was certainly a unique character and a good man. And I never heard him ever get cross with anybody. He was about as mellow as they come. He always treated me wonderfully, and I'll appreciate him always for that.
Yes, and he will always be remembered, always. Anyway, Fwaff, I thank you for your reflections here.
And, well, it was a pleasure, and we miss Bill, but there are many, many recordings of him on the radio, and his voice will live for a long, long time, and we'll all remember him for a long, long time, for sure. He influenced a lot of people.
That he did. Before we go, what music do you remember? What songs were pumping out of that stereo? I remember quite a few, but perhaps you can fill me in.
If I'm to pick out one,
yes,
I'd have to say it was Staring at the Color Organ while you played I Can See for Miles by the Who.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Somehow, some way, it seemed to ring true at that particular time.
Oh, it did, believe me. Well, hopefully I'll be jogging people's memories that are listening into this radio program that's British for program, and I thank you.
Good to talk to you, Timmy. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye, Faf. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Rock and roll! Let's boogie!
Radio Tuntron Worldwide.
Turn up!
Mr. Warren Ellie, W1GUD. I kind of caught him with his pants down, or shall I say, driving in his car. So he's on his cellular telephonium right now. So how you doing, Warren?
I'm doing good. I'm very sad to hear of Willie's passing.
Yeah, we all are. That's for sure.
He was just kind of a fearless leader of the AM crew back there in the 60s, and I know it went on for a number of years through the 70s and into the 80s. And kind of a party master.
Yes, he was a big-time party master.
Kind of like the Ken Kesey of the bunch.
Yes.
And, you know, it was a time that most of the big iron stations on Saturday nights would kind of have a song to play.
Yes, they did.
Kind of had a theme song. Only the big iron stations that sounded good, you know. And I always thought Willie's was "I Fought the Law."
I think it was.
But boy, it was pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. And those Icedale digs of his, you know, that was amazing. I mean, I'm absolutely certain that some of my hearing problems now in my 60s began in front of those gigantic speakers and color organs.
Yes, indeed.
Down there at Willie's.
Those color organs.
Oh, my God. And I'd never seen one before, you know. And I don't know, it's funny, but I always have thought of Willie all these years. Whenever I heard Steve Miller Band's Song for Our Ancestors, you know, the one with all the tugboat whistles and the sound of the harbor, and was off the Sailor album. I just remember that.
I don't have that. I'll have to add that. Because
it's really something that was always played, it seemed to me. It was just incredible on Willie's system there.
Yes, indeed. What other tunes do you recall that you heard pumping forth?
I seem to remember Hendrix.
Yeah.
Oh, and who? The the Who album. I don't know if it was Who's. It was the one with the commercials in it. You know?
Yeah, the Who Sell Out. Yes.
Can.
Yes, the Who Sell Out. One of my favorite albums.
Sell Out. That was it. Yeah.
Yep. And
I mean, music was a big thing down there, and to hear that kind of audio, you know, it was just. And I remember the microphone out at Icefield Lake.
Oh, yes, and, that's right. He had a remote microphonium.
Oh, yeah. He was very entertaining, and he really did make people feel welcome. You know, that was the thing about him. He wasn't a snob.
Yeah.
He was just a good guy who had the best signal around. And in the beginning, I'm sure he was one of the first to really have big iron and all that in those days.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
God bless him, and rest in peace, Willie.
Yeah, rest in peace, for sure. Anyway, Warren, let you get on with your trip there.
All right, my man. I'll definitely be listening to the playback.
Okay.
Have a good show, Timmy.
Have a safe trip.
Yes, sir.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hair too. Like some cat from Japan, he could lick 'em by smiling. He could leave 'em to hang. They came on so loaded, man. Well hung, Snow White tan. So where were the spiders while the fly tried to break our bones? Well, just the
telephonium right now. I have Mr. Joe Fell, W3GMS, who has just returned from, alas, a memorial service for Frank, KB3AHE, the slab bacon with the fat meat a-shaken. A very mellow guy who is no longer with us as well. So, Joe, how was it and who was there?
Yeah, Tim. Well, the service was very good. You know, it's bittersweet always to lose such a good friend. but it was well represented, and there's going to be another celebration with his ham friends that are going to be happening later in December. So that today was just the church service portion of it, but it was really, really well done, very, very nice. And I'm pulling up the picture here, and the miscreants from the AM community were Rick, W3RSW, Bill, K-A-A-W-T-Q, I think it is. Might have his call.
W-T-K. Yep, W-T-K. Yep.
Yeah, Bill was there, and he came all the way in from Ohio or West Virginia.
Wow.
Where some people came quite some distance. Then we had Steve. The old HUZ, the Huzz Man, which is now K4HX.
The Hex Man.
The Hex Man. And then we had good old Bertel Scurvelius. Yes, my neighbor and lifelong friend, Bert, WA3JYU. Todd was there, K1KAQ. He came all the way up from North Carolina. Carl, KD3CN. From out in Stroudsburg, PA, which is just a little bit west of our QTH in Urselden. And none other than Johnny, W3JN.
Ah, yes.
I also saw Vortex Joe there, N3IBX. So he came down, and we had the church service, and then we went back to Frank's old house, Carol's house, and they had some eatery and things like that, and it was as nice as it could be. The weather was good. It was a little bit on the cool side, but everybody was having a good time, and I think it helped Carol and her family along. And she has her mother now living with her, so that's been helping her along. But all Frank's antennas are still up. John W3JN has been pretty much handling the estate as far as finding homes for Frank's various radio pieces. But all in all, not bad. And then in mid-December, there's something, and I think it's posted on AM Phone when it is, there's going to be kind of a get-together down there with his radio friends and some of his machinist friends, because Frank was very much into machine shop and making things and working with lathes and working with metal and all that kind of stuff. So not too shabby overall, Tim.
Okay, Joe. Boy, I'm glad you called in, because it was Joe who... Actually, it was Paul, W2JTD. Hopefully, we'll get Paul on the line here.
Okay.
Of who emailed me your email to him. And it just kind of hit me like a ton of brick, because I go back a ways. But you go back a long time ago with Bill. What are your earliest remembrances and his influences upon you as a Johnny novice?
Yeah, well, Bill had, when I first got on the air, there was two big AM signals. It was local to the Westchester, Pennsylvania area. And the two kingpins at the time were Harry, W3FDY, Harry Davis, and he became my mentor and just had a tremendous impact on my life, and I've talked about that before. And the other one was Bill, W3DUQ. It was only about 4 miles away from where my parents lived and I lived growing up. So I guess it was about 1964 or so, maybe 63. You know, I was in Cub Scouts and I found this old floor model console radio. So I called my mother up and she came with her Triumph Herald car that was a convertible, and there's like four Cub Scouts, and we managed to get this old Buzzard floor model radio into the back of the car, and I got it home and it didn't work, so I just unplugged the tubes and cleaned everything, and by some lucky stroke the doggone thing started playing. And Bill W3DUQ was one of the first signals that I heard on the air, and he was at his parents' place on Powell Lane, just outside of Westchester.
And what did Bill refer to Westchester as?
Bust Crusher.
Yes.
Moniker on the air.
Yes.
And Bill was always into sound effects, as you will probably remember.
Yes, I do.
He had this tremendous echo machine made, and he used a tape recorder, and he staggered the playback heads, and he would get echo. And later he also had some Hammond reverb springs, and he used to talk to Igor,
And Igor was this fictitious character that was down in the basement of his parents' home. And he would open up the door, and he would turn the echo chamber on, and he would yell down the stairs, "Igor!" And you just heard all this echo, and it was really amazing. It sounded like he was really talking to some creature from beneath. And that kind of summarizes Bill. Bill was a guy that was always into trying new things. He would accomplish a given task, whether it be building the upside down tube rig or later in life, you know, the software-defined radio stuff, or one of the first guys really to modify an FT-101 and then the FT-1000 and all that series. And before that, you know, there was the Heathkit Apache with the sweep tubes in the output, or the upside-down tube circuit.
Basically a high-level balanced modulator.
Exactly.
And then he crammed
the carrier tube, and then you had the peak tube.
Yes.
And then he got a tube from that they used in these environmental shaker tables.
Yes, 5868s.
Is that what it was?
Yep, that's what P.W. Fallon is using as modulators in his 41000 rig. They're basically a repackaged 833, but a much better version.
Okay. Well, Bill built a big amplifier, linear, and he would have the Heathkit Apache with the upside-down tube circuit in that. And, you know, he'd be modulating 200-250% positive without any problem at all. So he had this very loud signal in the air. And very noticeable. But Bill's, I think one of the things that I'll never forget about Bill, Tim, is his nature of conversation. You know, I never really heard him raise his voice or get angry. He had this very mellow, laid-back type tonal quality that he would project on the air, and it was unique in that regard. And he would, that was kind of his signature. And, you know, it was one of those things where you heard Bill and you heard some, he always had a little bit of ambiance, a little blower noise in the background. And I made a comment the other day, you know, and all through all the different evolutions of different kind of rigs that Bill put on the air, he always sounded very similar. And that it goes all the way from the early Heathkit Apache modified upside-down tube circuit rig all the way up to the SDR stuff. And he always sounded, you know, you tuned in, he said, you knew right away that that was W3 Drink Up Quick, which was early phonetics that he used on the air. You probably remember that.
Oh, very much so. The other thing I remember is his squeaking office chair, his operator's chair.
That's correct.
And then his 10-minute ID timer.
Very unique.
Yes, yes.
And that was kind of Bill's signature. And I think there was that uniqueness in pretty much everything he did in life. He would accomplish something, and he would say, okay, I've been there, done that, I've optimized that, let me move on to something else. So he moved very quickly from project to project. And the thing that also I saw yesterday, I looked up on the Internet, and I found his original article, which was very early done, very early on a tube synchronous detector that was published in 73 magazine when Jim Fisk was the editor. And Jim Fisk later went on and started Ham Radio magazine. And Bill was self-taught in electronics. I don't think he had any formalized training, but he was self-taught, and he just had the gift for it. You know, he was very, very, very accomplished. So he built this tube synchronous detector, and I read the article yesterday, and it was just a beautifully well-written article. And this was long before, you know, sync detectors became in vogue. And, you know, kind of a pace setter he was. And, that, you know, and he was that way all the way right up to the last time he was on the air.
I remember his very, you know, when I visited his station in November of 67, I strongly remember his, he was probably one of the first stations to use audio processing. He built his own copy of the GE Unilevel, which is kind of like a gate stay level. Had that 6336 or whatever it was, 9-pin miniature dual variable mu triode as the gain element.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he had.
Yeah, and I remember that. And, of course, you know, I heard this Unilevel. And there was another ham that's a silent key now, Mark Stevens. K3VBG.
Oh, yeah.
And gone a number of years, and Mark built that after Bill did. And, you know, they would all go, you know, with their tongue, and to measure the decay time of these things. So you'd hear, you know, the audio go quiet on that loud tone, and then you would hear the background noise come up. It was very unique. And Bill gave me his original schematic of that. The unilevel was also built into a mixing console and an audio driver amplifier. And I'll never forget, because one of the transformers that fed the unilevel, he had a special notation on that you had to rotate that transformer for minimum hum level.
Yes. So
there was evidently some AC fields there, and he would tweak that. And he built that whole thing while he was working for a company in Westchester, ultrasonics company in Westchester. And he worked there for quite a while, and Bill had the habit of parting heavy and hardy on weekends.
Yes, indeed.
And so he would come in Monday, maybe he would show up about 3 o'clock or so, and the name of the company was Sonobon. It was the name of the ultrasonics company where he worked. And even though they appreciated all his technical talents, I guess eventually they couldn't deal with the showing up late on Monday after the hearty partying weekend. And I think he moved on. And I think that's when there was some transition time. But that's when he ended up working for Jesse, K3GKB.
Yes, they had a company known as Impossible Electronic Techniques, or IET.
Right, and remember the low-light cameras?
I sure do.
Okay. So he got involved in that, and then after that he worked for a computer company that they made, like, legacy punch readers and things like that, because punch readers were falling out of vogue and nobody made them. But evidently there was enough customers that had those that they wanted hardware to support some of their legacy stuff. So he worked at that company for a period of time, and that's a company that he actually retired from.
Yes, I do remember when he retired, he couldn't get out of there fast enough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I feel one of my proudest moments with Bill, there's been a lot of them, is I had a GMS radio bash here maybe 10, 12 years ago. It's been quite some time. And it was just kind of the local hams. And it was very difficult to get Bill to leave Icedale, which is where he lived.
Oh, it was impossible.
Yeah. And he found out about my GMS bash. I called him up and I says, Bill, we'd really like if he'd make it down there. And he just bought a new Honda Civic, I remember. And doggone, he came down. I have pictures of him down here. And it's one of the documented moments that he actually left his Icedale facility.
Wow.
Yeah. So I might have some audio recordings of him operating my GMS station. But another interesting thing, since we're talking about Bill and my posting on AM phone, I got an email from a gentleman called Bernie Sayers. And, you know, over the years, I heard Bill talk about Bernie. And Bernie sent me an email this morning, and I'd like to just read it here real quick, because Bernie was the guy that got Bill into radio.
Really?
And yeah, and he saw my posting on AM phone. He contacted me. I haven't gotten back to him yet, but Bernie's call is W3ZLU.
Boy, Bernie must be an old buzzard.
Oh, yes, he's probably as old as Hiram or even older.
Nobody's older than Hiram, but anyway.
So anyway, he says, I just read your bill on QRZ.com. Okay, so it was an AM phone. I had put a notice over on QRZ.com as well at somebody's suggestion. I received a telephone call this morning from Sandy about Bill's passing. I think Sandy may have been Bill's niece. He says, I certainly can't take any credit for the amazing stuff Bill did in ham radio, but I can take credit for getting him interested in amateur radio. I got my ticket, W3ZLU, in 1952 at the age of 11. If my old brain remembers it correctly, maybe 1953, Bill and I rode the same bus to school and grew up in Suburban Village near Westchester. When he realized that I had a ham ticket, he spent every evening and every waking hour studying theory and going to code classes in Westchester. We stayed in contact all these years. He called me about 2 weeks ago. Sadly, he had great difficulty making clear speech. And he says it's sort of ironic because the biggest AM signal on the air, or one of the biggest AM signals on the air, was having trouble putting together his words. And he would be very frustrated because he couldn't communicate what was in his mind. He said, we went our separate ways after I moved to Ardmore, but we talked often on 80 meters. Quite a guy. And signed Bernie W3ZLU. So I thought that was pretty neat that,
wow,
that Bernie reached out. And I heard Bill over the years of talking about a Bernie, and now this kind of completes the chapter of that book.
You know, speaking of Bill, he had a sister who recorded her own cover version of These Boots Were Made for Walking, a tune called This Rig Was Made for Talking.
I remember that.
I'd love to get a copy of that.
Boy, so would I. I remember that on 75 meters.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know the story. You know, I guess enough years have passed so we can talk about it. But Bill lost his license.
Oh, I know.
For some music playing. But he was never really off the air because his good friend Jesse, K3GKB, came in and bought the station for a penny or a dollar. And it really, really annoyed the FCC because here they had zapped his license for a year, and here he was back on the air almost instantaneously, operating under K3GKB, and the same type of on the air format continued.
I remember that.
And you'll probably remember when Bill had handled the groundwork for K3GKB Aeronautical Mobile.
Yes.
You remember that one?
Vaguely.
Well, a quick story there is Jesse was very much into skydiving. So they said, well, you know, wouldn't it be neat if you could get on, and I forget whether it was 75 meters or 40 meters. I guess it was probably 75. Wouldn't it be neat if we could get you on 75 AM Parachute Mobile? So Bill pulled up in his car. He had an LMAC AF-67. I forget what receiver he was using. And he had this little bug that he found. It was a surveillance bug. I remember him because Bill showed it to me. It was in this real chrome small container about the size of a cigarette pack, which was small for the day. And they strapped that on Jesse next to his spare chute. And sure enough, Jesse jumps out of the airplane. I'm not sure up how high he was, maybe 4,000, 5,000 feet up. And the first thing you hear, and people still talk about the bay, is, I'm tumbling, and everybody's on the ground. Is this guy going to be okay? In the meantime, Bill was rebroadcasting over that bug transmitter and receiver on either 75 or 40, and I'm pretty sure it was 75. And that was the first time that I remember an aeronautical mobile dropping from a parachute, from a plane, skydiving, free-falling, actually on 75 AM. And I, at the time, I was up at my mentor, Harry, W3FDY's, up in Parksburg, his radio site. So I was listening and talking to him at that point in time. So that was another thing. And this was something that Bill and Jesse conjured up of something unique to do. And for its day, it was very, very unique.
Yes. I certainly remember that. And you know something? Years later, Bill packaged up that AF-67 and sent it up to me. I remember hearing him mobile while his facility at Icedale was being put together.
That's right.
And I treasured that thing. I was going to build up a power supply for it, fix the audio in it and all that. Well, needless to say, I lost that in the fire. But
what a shame.
Yeah, what a shame.
Yeah, he had that in his, I forget what year Chevy had. It might have been a 57 Chevy. And I remember it because he had a big board on the passenger seat. And the AF-67 was bolted down. And he used to go from his parents' place where he was living up to the new property. And his father gave him that property. His father owned some land up near Icedale Lake.
33 acres, as I remember.
Yeah. And he gave him the land, and Bill put his mobile home in there. And the first thing he put up, even before the mobile home was delivered, was the dipole antenna. And it was way up
there. Way up there. Must have been about 80, 90 feet up in the tall, spindly trees.
And I seem to remember he had a parasitic reflector under it for a period of time.
Maybe.
And he was running from tasks with a big old buzzard knife switch to get it signaled. But he would be sitting there in the Chevy and with the LMAC plugged into the antenna long before there was any dwelling on the property itself. And, you know, just anticipating when the whole move was going to happen. And then it ultimately happened. And that's when he set up the upside-down tube exciter, which was the modified Apache, into the big amplifier.
Yes, indeed.
The other thing I'd like to say, too, is Bill remained constant with his advanced thinking all the way up to the end. I had the pleasure of visiting him several times up at the nursing home. And he probably could have gone back to his home in Icedale, but he told me on the phone, he says, Joe, he says, I'm going to stay here. I really like this place. He says, I've been very much of a recluse much of my life, and he says, there's all kinds of great ladies around here to talk to. And he says, I'm just having a blast. So it was his choice, and he worked some kind of arrangement, financial arrangement, I guess, with the nursing home. And he was able to stay there, and he was having a blast. About a year ago, Martha and I went up, and it was a typical Bill and everything. And he would, you know, all his stories and things like that. And then I went up with my friend Bob, N2HM, XWA3JYT, a good friend of Bert, JYU's, and we went up maybe 2 months ago, and Bill was in the common area, you know, where they sit. We didn't go to his room per se, and he was talking about all these inventions. I mean, his mind was just still very, very active, and one of the things he was proud of.
Man, I just hate it when that happens. Sorry, Joe. You know, we run out of time here. After all, we have to keep time. And, you know, about Uncle Willie there's just so much more. So hopefully, coming up a week from now, will be a continuum of the Uncle Willie honorarium. Yes, the Uncle Willie honorarium. Whatever, friends. Glad you tuned in. Coming up on Area 51, the Lumpy Gravy Radio Show. And 7490. And good evening once again, valued shortwave listeners. It's another wireless emanation from Radio Timtron Worldwide, heard through the auspices of WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This broadcast is for the, my God, it's the 22nd of November already, in the year of our Lord. And tonight we are supposed to be quadricasting on 5110, Area 51, 7490, 9330, and 15.420. Here at Henry Neal R. Mountain Radio Studios, the only signal I'm able to receive is 9330 on backscatter. Area 51 is non-existent, which means there's probably some transmitter difficulties that hopefully will be remedied. And if you're not receiving us, you can receive us on the internet. Just go to our website, wbcq.com, and there'll be a live studio feed. Or shall I say, a studio feed of what's going out on 7490. So we will be around for the next 2 big hours. For fun, games, and entertainment. And the first hour of Radio Timtron Worldwide will be a continuation of the Uncle Willie remembrance. After all, his shoes will be impossible to fill, as many people's shoes are when they pass from the planet. So, in the first part of this broadcast, I'll be sharing with you some stories and, you know, why he means so much to me, as well as a few other people who will be featured in this broadcast. Second hour of Radio Tim-tron Worldwide will be time to lighten up, fun games and entertainment, as we must probe our proboscises onward and forward. Well, in his college years, Uncle Willie did participate a bit in some Greaser 50s musical events, recording acts. There was a group by the name of the Bell Notes. They recorded a tune called I've Had It. Uncle Willie, I understand, sung backup. And he met them all when he was going to the University of Pennsylvania. Well, that was back in the Greaser 50s. And I was a young, booger-brained JN then. Yep, sure was.
Honey, I can't love you enough. It's all right to hold on tight. But when you you to love me, to love me right. Oh, come on, baby, now don't be shy. This love was meant for you and I. When rain, sleet, or snow, I'm gonna be wherever you go. You have left me breathless.
And the veins of a mummy named Betty. I first frowned upon it, but with ketchup on it, it tasted very much like spaghetti.
From John Zacherle. Yes, a fave of Uncle Willie's from way back when. Yes, no matter what shape your stomach is in, I'm putting some red stuff into my stomach. Yes. This song was popular. popular. It was new. It was happening when Uncle Willie's sign-off party occurred. Yep. That was quite the experience, I'll tell you. Well, we had to leave off in the, I can't call them interviews, but what can I call them? Remembrances of those that have known Bill for years and years and years, and facts about the man. Last week, as we were closing our broadcast out, Joe Fell, W3GMS, was in a long old buzzard transmission with a lot of information packed into it, and we had to bail out because the next train was going to be leaving from the station. Yeah, the Lumpy Gravy Radio Show. Speaking about the Lumpy Gravy Radio Show, this evening they'll be live. After the Lumpy Gravy Radio Show on Area 51 is Zombo. Yes. Remember Zombo's Mondo Bondage Record Party? Well, he's on a an FM station somewhere, you know, one of those non-profit type. So, a clip of his show will be featured tonight. Tonight it's Pirate Pizza Night up in Monticello. So, what can I say? We join Joe right now.
I went up with my friend Bob, N2HM, XWA3JYT, a good friend of Bert, JYU's, and we went up maybe 2 months ago, and Bill was in the, like, the common area, you know, where they sit. We didn't go to his room, per se, and he was talking about all these inventions. I mean, his mind was just still very, very active, and one of the things he was proud of, he said he took a cassette recorder and he turned it into a language conversion machine.
Wow.
and he says you could speak into it in any language and dial the rotary switch, and lo and behold, it would come out any other language. And he was telling all the doctors about this up there. But the other thing, he says when he first got there, there was silos that were built by the government underneath this facility, and that was disrupting a lot of people's sleeping patterns. So he was able to talk to the staff and figure out, you know, where the master switches on these silos and actually decommission them. And then he says the residents were sleeping much better.
No kidding. I remember him. I would talk with him. He would call me on the phone. And his audio was so distorted, it was very difficult for me to understand. It was all I could do to try and reconstruct what he was saying. And, yeah, you know, about the last time I heard from him was like 4 months ago, 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't called him. I thought of calling him. Mm-hmm. But like everything, it kind of slips through your fingers, and then before you know it, they're gone.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah, and that's probably a lesson in, for all of us, you know, that when you have the moment with the people, it's, you know, just drop what you're doing and make that effort. And I wanted to go up. In fact, 2 weeks ago, I was going to go up and visit him again. And you're right. It was getting, even in person, it was getting more difficult to communicate with him. And not that it matters at this point, but I never found what was really wrong with him.
Nah.
You know, as far as what caused the death, or I just, he never told me. I never asked. And we just tried to chat. And his memory was just impeccably sharp, though. You know,
wow.
He was kind of in his own world, but he all the facts and figures of his whole life were just right there, and he remembered everything to the microscopic level.
Wow. You know, I wish I was able to have taken the time to just get in the car, put everything aside, and have driven down. And we talked about me coming down visiting. I probably would have convinced him to leave for a while, and I would have brought him up here. But
yeah,
I don't know if that would have worked.
But, and the other thing I can say, I want to let everybody know, you know, Bill was very content in his situation, and I have no reason to believe that that contentment did not prevail right up to his final moments. I mean, he was just a very, very happy person. He wasn't like one of these old people, you know, that know they're on the way out. Bill was cheery. He was upbeat. And he was ready, you know, to go on the other side whenever that time came and had no remorse, no regrets or anything. So it was a very, very positive state of mind he was in.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was cool. But quite a legend on the air. You know, he really left a mark. And yeah, it's one of those things. Maybe you remember that. Do you remember what microphone Bill used?
Originally, when I first met him, he had a vacuum tube type electric condenser microphonium. It may have been an AKG, and it came from WBAI. I think Jesse kifed it when he was interning there.
Uh-huh.
And that microphonium really represented the third bald kind of audio. That he never had anything that quite equaled that.
Yeah. Did he use that all through the time, even in his later years when he was on the air, or did he switch to some other kind of mic?
Yeah, he switched because it died.
Okay, now.
It crapped out.
Yeah. But it was funny because he would throw together a few Signetic compressor chips, you know, and he would make that those few chips sound just like the Unilevel. And then I remember later on he bought one of those multi-band processors from Behringer, where they divided the audio up into various octaves and you know, handled each one.
Mm-hmm.
And with that one, you know, that one sounded good. But he always sounded, at least to me, you know, very, very similar.
Yes.
With vastly different technologies on all the gear that he ran over the years.
It's knowing what you got and how to set it up and make it work the way you want it to work.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a great engineer.
Yeah. Yeah. The other, talking about engineering, for a short time, and I worked at the WCOJ between high school and college, but Bill worked there a little bit before me, and he caught the field on fire. Did you hear about that story?
No.
Yeah, he was out burning trash, and the owner, Lou Seltzer, and Bill Halpern were the owners of the station, and I guess Bill was burning trash or something, and it got away from him.
Oh, wow.
So, so he caught the field on fire, and that's what got him fired, because it actually was so robust that it burned a lot of the hard line up.
Oh, my God.
The directional array.
Oh.
And, you know, it was one of those things. But, yeah, it was pretty cool. But Bill was there for a period of time, but ultimately he got the boot.
Beat. Anyway, Joe, I got to get ready to move on here, and got a couple of other people to contact and add to this, because all I have is a scant 2 hours here.
Okay.
And I really appreciate you calling.
It was my pleasure, and good luck in putting something together as a tribute to our friend Wild Willie. Drink up quick, Radio Icedale and all that kind of stuff, and he's sure going to be missed.
Oh, yeah. For sure. That's an understatement, Joe.
Okay.
Anyway.
On the wireless.
Absolutely. And if you're listening in tonight between 7 to 9, you'll hear how this whole thing glues together, dear.
Okay. Well, I will be listening for a period of time, probably closer to the 7 to 8 hour, because I have an experimental license to operate on from 1720 to 1800.
Really?
So, yeah. And I'm going to be on with 2ZM and maybe 2ZE and Jerry KG 2BK.
In other words, below the 160 meter band.
Yeah. And we're doing some DRM, Digital Radio Mondale Digital Experimentation. And Jerry's kind of the chief engineer on it.
Well, you know something? Alan is talking up experimenting with DRM on 9330.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be in the works.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I'm still learning about it, and Jerry KG2BK has a scheme that he's working on to do it high level rather than low level and linear amplify it. And he and Bob Raitt actually have had some pretty good communications with DRM, and he's trying to put a little different spin on it. So it's been a fun project to kind of watch the progress on it.
Interesting.
So we're on every Saturday evening at 8, and then those guys get on 8 o'clock on Wednesday evening as well.
Wow.
So I will tune into BCQ between 7 and 8 before I go over to 1750.
Okay, Munn. Great talking with you, Joe.
Absolutely. Have fun.
Well, will do. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Chicks. total blam blam. She said she had to squeeze a Dutchie, and then she
boy, you're gonna carry that weight.
Uncle Willie Remembrance. I remember that tune, pulsating away in the color organs. Yeah.
Woo! Somebody done been to the Walmart.
Man, this is the stuff I got for Christmas.
Well, you cleaned up. What'd you get?
Don't buy into Black Friday, friends. Yeah, this is the move I meant to make, and, you know, things tend to screw up around here.
When I get off of this mountain, you know where I want to go. Straight down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico. To Lake Charles, Louisiana, little Bessie girl I once knew. She told me just to come on by if there's anything that she could do. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She mends me, I don't have to speak. She defends me a drunker stream if I ever did see one. Good luck had just stung me to the racetrack I did go. She bet on one horse to win, and I bet on another to show. Odds were in my favor, I had them 5-1. And that nag to win came around the track, sure enough we had won. Up on Cripple Creek, and she sends me in my spring a lead. She bids me, I don't have the speed. She defends me a drunkard's dream. Hey. She tore it up and threw it in my face, just for a laugh. Now there's one thing in the whole wide world I sure would like to see. That's when that little love of mine dips a donut in my teeth. Up on Cripple Creek, she sends me if I spring a leak. She
few others that were hanging out at the time. And on the telephonium right now, I have Paul Wolcott, W2JTD, Jingling, Tingling, Dingleberries. So,
yes, good evening, Tim.
Good evening, Paul. Paul was the man who emailed me the email message from Joe W3GMS, and I'm sure it hit you like it hit me like a ton of brick.
Certainly did. Uncle Willie and I go way back, not as way back as you guys go, but we certainly, when we connected in the mid-80s, I spent every Sunday afternoon on the radio with Uncle Willie, and as well as Dave ZRF, who is also a silent key, so that's a lot to lose in the space of a couple of years.
Yes,
and
it is.
We just lost Frank, too, and my goodness.
But, yep.
Uncle Willie was the senior of the seniors, and that's tough to get used to. Even though he'd been somewhat inactive the last couple of years, knowing he was around was still a comfort, you know?
Yes, yes. Well, I just thought I'd rattle a number of chains, rattle a few cages, you know, and what do you remember about some of the better moments of your association with Bill and how he affected you?
Well, first of all, I remember many times completely laughing my ass off. We had so much fun. I remember QSOs of such a bright, sparkly, intellectual quality that you just don't find every day. It's like wandering around a town that's kind of dingy and raggedy, and you turn out of a slop bucket land and into AM land, and the lights come on. But every now and then there's a broken window and some screaming and stuff, and then you stop into this funky looking little bookstore, and when you sit down, you order some bitter bean juice, and you start up a conversation with a guy, and all of a sudden you realize he knows. That's kind of like Uncle Willie.
Yes. Good way of putting it.
And his topics ranged from, modifying a Yaesu FT-101 and all the subtle intricacies involved therein to the paranormal and UFOs. We would get on the future net on Sunday afternoon and discuss all the various sightings of things around the country and just have a blast. It was certainly a lot better than hi, fine business, your 5-9 next, please, you know?
Yes, for sure.
Definitely going to miss Uncle Will, guy. I miss them all. Of course, we're all growing long in the tooth, so...
I know.
Make the most of every day, because you never know when it'll be your last QSO.
This is true.
Yeah, man. Well, I look forward to... here in the rest of the show this evening, and you do a really good job. It's really nice that you're dedicating this evening to Uncle Willie.
Must.
I'm sure he would have gotten a real kick out of it as well.
Yes. Well, take some uppers, drink some bean juice, and take in the full 2-hour slot.
I'll stay awake, and if I start to fall asleep, all I have to do is tick off the cat, she'll bite me, and I'll be up for another half hour.
Either that or take couple of toothpicks, break them in half, and prop your eyelids open. Much like propping open the hood of an old car, you know, that's missing the prop lever.
Yeah. Just spare 2x4 and hope it sticks.
All right,
Tron, 7-3, I'll be talking to you, man.
All the good numbers on you, good buddy.
Oh, man, later.
I can't see myself.
Steve Miller Band's Children of the Future. Yeah, we're just going with the flow. You can hear that flow of Foster in the background. You know, I was going to do the Uncle Willie Remembrance Special for the first hour, but you know, it's going to bleed into the second hour. But what the hell? I have a whole hour coming up. Jeez, we'll try. So, I have beforest me here a large clash of red stuff, shunny. You know, life's too short. The people you know when you were young, and then you become older, and they become older still, and then pass from the face of the planet. Well, I have many remembrances of Uncle Willie and how he helped me crash through barriers. Tell you a story. This is like probably back in the very early 70s. I'm down to visit Uncle Willie, and he asked a favor of me. Well, he wanted me to put this UHF TV antenna at the top of this 85-foot tower. Yep, that's what he wanted to do. I'm trying to think. I don't think he used that for a 75-meter antenna. He had at least a 75 or 80-meter dipole up about 80 or 90 feet. I mean, that thing was way up there in the trees. Picture perfect, you know. Ladder line came down right into his trailer, man, you know. Well done. Well done for sure. So, he wanted to receive the UHF TV stations out of Philadelphia. I think Filthy was, I don't know, 40 miles away or something like that. And he's kind of a little bit down in a bowl with lots of vegetation, so he needs the height. It's all right, sure. So he breaks out the safety belt. Yes, he breaks out that safety belt and I suit up with it. And I don't know if I was carrying the antenna up or what, but along with it, or maybe I was just bringing up a rope. But in any case, there was this seat they could bring up that was made out of plywood. It's a little bit of a triangular narrows that would slip over the legs of the tower and just kind of made up. You could plock your fat ass on there and just kind of hang out, you know. Do what you had to do. Well, this particular tower was solid rod leg, but the face was only 8 inches. 8 inches, man. If you've climbed towers before, that ain't much. Oh, it was well installed and guy wires done up really well, tension just so. So there I am. I'm about halfway up the tower, you know. And I'm getting a little nervous. I don't think I've ever climbed anything this high and this skinny. So I'm getting up there, and then my legs begin to shake. They go into parasitic oscillations, and I'm starting to flip out. And there I am, about 45, 50 feet up in the air. It's like, holy shit, what do I do now? And I'm hanging onto the tower, and I don't know, Uncle Willie, I guess, is trying to calm me down. And by the grace of God, I was able to make it down the tower and back down to terra firma. So after I calm down, I drank a beer, and I smoked a joint. And right up the tower I went, man, this is a challenge, and I'm going to meet the challenge. And damn it, I crashed through that barrier and just did it. Anyway, what can I say? It's station identification time. This is WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA, International Shortwave, broadcasting here, there, and everywhere. We're broadcasting on 5110 kilohertz in our 60-meter service, 7490 in our 39-meter service, 9330 in our 32-meter service, and 15.420, 19 meters worldwide. That's who we are. We're WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. Thank you for listening. And now we continue with our programming here on our QuadraCast. Gotta reset things there. So there I was. I just freehand climbed up the tower, you know, and hauled up that ass mount seat, whatever you want to call it. And I get up there, you know, and I lock it in place and plonk my ass down on. I'm looking around. I said, man, this is cool. I'm looking at the rolling hills, you know, summertime. The Green Revolution had already happened, you know. And there's something about that rolling terrain of the area, that area in Pennsylvania that's calming, you know. Yeah, it's very lush. So I got up there and I clamped on the UHF TV ant, and he points out where he wanted the thing aimed, and he runs in there and he's frigging around with the TV, and yeah, that's it right there. Lock that sumbitch down. So I hung out up the tower for a while. And then I started the descent. And I emerged a new man when I hit the ground. Just on my 2 feet, that is. And there you go. Another tale of how Uncle Willie influenced my life. And I have here with me Mr. Chris Jackson. Chris, tell me, how much does Uncle Willie, or shall I say, how much did he influence you in the early days and your very earliest start of in ham radio?
I think Bill and the people that he was hanging with on 3870 back then, Bill in particular, directly influenced me into getting on AM. He was a tremendous influence on me and was for many years. As much a mentor to me in terms of ham radio as you were my father. I first ran across Bill on the air, I would say I was probably 12 years old. It would be the winter, probably January of 1968. My father was in the process of getting back into ham radio. He had basically been inactive since World War II. And he started to finish the upstairs of our house. He built the house himself, and he commenced while finishing that upstairs to putting in a radio room for himself, and he put a set of ARC 5s on the air, and I think a BC-348 receiver, and he was trying to interest my brother in radio. My brother had no interest in it, but Dad made a two-tube regenerative receiver, which lasted about 2 weeks with my brother, and my father handed it over to me, and had that little receiver with, it had coils for the broadcast band 80 and 40, I believe, set up out in the washroom. and strung, I don't know, 50 feet of magnet wire out the window or over the garage roof or something, gave it to me and let me have at it. And he really wanted me to learn the code and be an old-time radio amateur, which I just had. I was interested in radio, very interested in radio. I was already farting around with little spark transmitters and stuff and interfering with him when he was on the air. So I'm tuning around on this thing one afternoon, and I can't tune in sideband very effectively. Even though I have that receiver to the day, it does work on sideband. Couldn't find anything that interested me. I did hear people on AM, but they were very high, fine business stuffed shirt. You know, these cats were probably wearing a suit and a bow tie while they were on the air, and they were much older. Of course, you know, I was 12 years old. And couldn't relate to that. And then one afternoon, happened across Bill W3DUQ, Bacon WB3YPE, forget who all else was in there, but it was that crew. And these guys were having fun. They had a phone patch hooked up, which was, I think, even quasi-legal, barely legal at that time. And Bill was trying to reach some friend of his that was in the service and was stationed out at Hickam Field in Hawaii, and he was he was teasing. I think today's terms it would be sexually harassing the long distance operators. You know, while broadcasting this on the air, trying to get a call into this guy at Hickam, and he got as far as the operator in Honolulu, who really didn't want to transfer him to the military operator at Hickam, and they kind of argued back and forth a little bit. Bill starts sexually harassing her and teasing her and this and that and the other thing, and I couldn't believe my ears that anything like that could be going on in ham radio. These guys were obviously young. They were maybe having a couple of beers or something stronger, and just they were having a good time. I'd never heard anything like it on ham radio, and that was it. I started listening to them every night, and eventually by that summer my father got tired of the ARC 5 rigs and put up a DX60 on the air. That's when I started to sneak upstairs and talk to those guys and to talk to you, Tim, as well.
Yes, I remember that.
So I had a good antenna. It was an 80-meter dipole. It was up about 70 or 80 feet, fed with open wire line. And, of course, that's that great location down there on the water. But back to Bill, as I listened more to what those guys were doing, I was fascinated by the broadcast quality audio and this mysterious device Bill had. He called the upside down tube, which was apparently his secret weapon against the sidebanders and so on. And he was driving a linear with it and so on. But this guy just had all kinds of audio, and he had this this switch that he would hit and go, "Look, Ma, no carrier," and all of a sudden the carrier's gone. And I guess I didn't know what it was at the time. He was on double sideband, and I was just really interested in what was going on. And eventually, after getting caught bootlegging, talking to them and talking to you, Tim, using my father's call, my father made me get a license, and that kind of put me off a 75-meter phone until about 1971, at which point I got a general class license, and eventually upgraded to the point that I could start talking to those guys. And that's when I really started to learn from them. And he taught me how to put a scope on the receiver and interpret what I was looking at and then look at my own signal off the air and so on. And he sent me a schematic for his audio board and for the upside-down tube rig, which I never built the upside-down tube, but I did build the W3DUQ mixer. It was actually also contained a compressor. I just built the mixer and taught me about how to equalize the audio, presence rise, and compression and limiting, and all that good stuff. And just, you know, continue to learn tons and tons of stuff from this guy. And we both had a mutual interest in the paranormal. I've been apparently psychic / clairvoyant all my life, and Bill had an intense interest in that. And we started playing games over the air, you know, think of a number, or I wrote a number down and guessed the number and all this. We started doing all that kind of, you know, we'll call it paranormal research. This would have been in the early 70s. And bring us up to probably when I was a junior in high school, a nearby ham who was also on AM, Pete McNulty, WA1SOV. Have you talked to him yet?
I called his wife, but I think I'm going to get him on the line here after I'm finished up with you.
Yeah, he lives up the road from here. I think he's near here in Denver.
Newtown, Connecticut.
Yeah, I hear him. Yeah, he's about 15 miles from here. I can hear him on 10 meters. Anyway, Pete or I somehow convinced, this would be the summer of 73, and Tim, I don't remember if you were there for that party, but I somehow convinced my parents to let Pete take me down to a big party that was Bill was having. This would have been July of 73.
Wasn't there.
We rode down there, and Dave K3ZRF was there, rode his motorcycle into the woods that afternoon. Joe, WA1IWQ.
P.W. Fallon.
Yeah, Rich, K1ETP was there. There were some other hams who I don't remember who they were. The jar was passed around, and very strong things were passed around, and ended up being quite the weekend. Bill had a pirate TV station, which he fired up with a huge TV Yagi pointed down the hill from him in the valley. It was a huge trailer park, and Bill opened up, I think, on Channel 2 that night of the party, and we broadcast Deep Throat from a 8mm film-to-video chain. Bill was in the video. And Linda Lovelace with Dog, and some pretty nasty stuff into the night. I think there was some FM broadcasting going on from there as well. But that's the weekend that I met Bill. I actually never saw him in person again.
Wow.
Yeah, that was just that one time. But we remained very close friends on the radio for years and years and years until after, well, they opened up the bottom end of 75 meters. To phone, and he moved down there with his group, and I never spent much time down there, and we kind of got out of touch with each other over the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Is the times that he was active just did not really coincide with the time that I had to spend.
Yeah. Oh, another thing.
Unfortunate.
After I spoke to you this morning, Tim, I dug out that CD that Bert, WA3JYU, sent me about 10 years ago. It's recordings from the late 50s up into the late 60s, and includes a lot of the Pennsylvania gang. The initial QSO that I heard with Bill and friends harassing the long-distance operators, a portion of that is on that recording. I went back and I only listened to that CD, I think, once or twice since I had it. I went back an hour ago and listened to it again. And I was just amazed, because that is a recording of the first time I ever heard that guy. It's just some kind of strange miracle that thing found its way to me. It just blew me away.
You know, I think Bert sent me a copy of that as well, and it's probably somewhere. If I find it before showtime, I'll play some excerpts.
It deserves airplay.
Absolutely.
Parachute Mobile is
yes.
on there. The guys are so young. Joe GMS is in there in one of these QSOs. He had to sign out to go do his homework.
Boy.
I got to laugh out of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
time hurtles by.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, all right. I appreciate you spending time remembering, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, Tim, because I hadn't responded to that. I was really blown away by it when you told me. I mean, I knew he had checked himself into a home, but that was not for health reasons that I'd known. I think it was more a matter of convenience.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't addressed any of this on any of the, you know, the AM websites or whatever. I'm not real big on those things. I'm very happy to have had the opportunity to do it on the air with you.
Yeah, well, I am really honored to have you here and that you're participating in this operation here.
And am I right in thinking that he was as much a mentor to you as you were to
me?
He
was my mentor.
Okay, that's pretty much what I thought.
Yeah, yep, definitely. Well, all right. Hang on just a minute, and we're going to head back into some tunage here on Radio Timtron Worldwide.
me. Skinny Minnie, she ain't skinny. She's tall, that's all. Yeah. Some gal, nice on me. Well, slightly slimmer than a fishing pole.
Yes, and here we are. Yes, here we are. Remembrance of Uncle Willie. And now our final guest, Mr. Pete McNulty, W-A-1-S-O-V. How you doing there, Pete?
Hello, Tim.
Sure, how are you? I'm doing all right. So, I know you're on limited time, and I'm stretching this thing out a little bit. So, what are your remembrances of Uncle Willie when you started out as a young JN, you know, and just starting to get hair on your nuts and thinking about life in general? And
yeah, right. Oh, boy. I remember listening in the mid-60s to Uncle Willie and the Pennsylvania Boys, and I think you were coming into your own, too, around that time.
Yeah.
And I remember Uncle Willie with K3DBG,
Mark.
And I remember Dave was in there, K3ZRF, and Bacon.
Yeah, Bacon.
YPE, who is also, I guess, a Silent Key now.
All those guys are gone, man, I hate to say.
I know.
Kind of sucks.
It really does. It really does. Some of the remembrances I have of those, that whole crew is amazing. And I heard Chris before talking about how, you know, Uncle Willie inspired him. And he inspired me, too.
Oh, me too.
He was just a genuine fellow, you know?
Yeah.
And such an imagination. I don't know. It was just a bunch of guys that all clicked together in that era, you know?
I know.
It was amazing. Of course, you were one of them, too.
You know, I got to dig out that CD. I think Bert sent it to me. And when I find bits and pieces, or shall we say pits and pieces, I'm going to be featuring them here and there in future broadcasts of Radio Timtron Worldwide. Now, to update the shortwave broadcast listener with Pete McNulty, he built a high-fidelity sideband generator, which we had on 9330 for a while. The thing was phenomenal, although it did have a couple of intermittents, but maybe it may wind up on Area 51. You never know, but it's a modern technology that makes us sound really good.
The thing about that is that it could give you independent sideband, but the license would never allow it, right?
No, but you know, we discussed DRM, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Alan has a bug up his ass to do DRM on 9330 now.
Really?
Yep. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll talk about it, yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing at another point in time.
Right.
But anyway, Pete has been an instrumental contributor here to the state of the art of WBCQ. So that's the thing, we're just one big radio fam damily.
Yeah, we all kind of work off each other. It's amazing.
It is, and you know something? It's a great rush. You know, it's been a great rush to know you, Pete, you know?
Well, likewise. I mean, I remember you gave me some of the first components I built my big 813 transmitter in back in the early 70s.
Hey, you still have one of those 806s?
I still got one of them, yep.
Man, you got to build an SBE with it.
Yeah, right.
Hey, that'll work great. I'm going to build me one. You know, it'll be very steampunkish.
Well, I'll give you the tube back, and I'll let you
great.
Do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I used to use those in the modulators until one of the filaments in one of them crapped out and I couldn't find any more.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
But Uncle Willie, he was a real inspiration. I remember talking to him all throughout the 70s, you know, about Curly in photography.
Yes.
Aura, and, you know, the, what was it, the, Uri Geller.
Yes,
right?
yes, you read my mind. Uri Geller and you know, just fobbing the finger, you know, or the thumb to get the fork to bend.
Right, I remember sitting there thinking, God, this key's really starting to bend, but, you know, we were so screwed up, we didn't know.
I know, I'd be there stroking a fork and stroking it and stroking it and stroking it. I think it's going to go squee!
Well, oh, Jesus. But I remember going down there with Chris that time, and you know, the first thing he did was hand me a key. He says, here, bend this.
And one thing I remember years ago, there was this UFO convention.
Oh, yeah, right.
And myself and my lady, maybe she was my wife by then, Kathy, and P.W. Fallon, and we
right.
all drove down there. Yes, it was in King of Prussia, and I think you were there, too.
Yes, I remember the caravan out there.
Oh, yeah, it was just like, you know, as they say in ham radio, QTF, over.
Yeah, and the guy wasn't too good as I remember.
No.
I do remember Dave ZRF yelling at the guy, charlatan, charlatan. They were a lot of fun.
Oh, so, God, yes.
Remember the pyramids?
Yes. The pyramids.
We had to sit under the pyramids.
Yep. I remember one time I arrived with my lady and P.W. Fallon.
Yeah.
And my lady and I jumped into the pyramid.
Yes, I remember that.
Yep. You know, listen to the B-52 tune, the B-52's tune underneath the strobe light. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's part of life. You know, it was a blast back then.
We had a lot of fun, didn't we?
God, yes.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun, man. And we got to continue having fun. Anyway, while I'm at it, you know, as we're streaming out of here, you've been into streaming jazz programming.
Yeah, I have.
Tell us about it.
Well, I've been doing a show for about 5 years on Pure Jazz Radio, just on a whim, and it's really turned into a lot of fun. The name of the show is Sound Moves with Ray Parker, and it's on like 6 times a week internationally, and it's really an upscale jazz program. Gotten to know a lot of the entertainers in the art, and done some interviews with some of them. In fact, we got another one coming up in a week or so. So it's a lot of fun, Tim. Have fun doing that.
You know, that's
nice diversion from engineering, which I do.
Yes. Why do you think I do this cockamamie radio broadcast?
Yeah, right. It's the same reason, right?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, and that's why people have to buy time and put good programming on BCQ, man.
Yeah.
God love you, man.
They don't sell too much commercials on there, do they?
Well, no. You buy the time, and then you hawk your wares using our airwaves for that.
Okay.
That's how it works, you know. You have the Chicken Littlers selling, you know, sea rations and colloidal silver, which, when applied correctly, does help the situation. There's many things, you know. I say there's a gem of truth in everything.
Right.
You just have to dig for it, that's all.
There you go.
Well, shit, it's good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, it is. I haven't had a lot of time to be on the air, but we do try to get on at least once a week.
Yep. With Jerry.
Yeah,
Now, Jerry is another radio head. His call sign, WA2FNQ. What can you tell us about Jerry? He maintains a stream of Greaser Oldie programming, as I remember.
Right, on the great 1290.
Yes, WGLI, GLI.
Yes. GLI radio, yep. And he has that thing fully automated all the time. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Whole different format, but he's doing very well. Still down in Long Island. And just talked to him this afternoon for a little bit.
Yeah, I guess you guys get on Saturdays, what, 5 o'clock?
Yeah, generally, down the lower end of the band.
Yeah, we're going to leave that undisclosed, you know.
Yeah.
Right. So that you radio flashers out there in Radio Land won't go by and flash them.
All right. Well, it is really great. You know, I can remember one other thing, just a quick one, with VZR. Remember W1?
Of course, Pete.
Yeah, I haven't heard him in a long time, but...
He's around. He's living in Kennebunk, Maine.
Yeah, he moved, right, back from New Hampshire or someplace.
Yeah, he's bounced around. God, that guy's bounced around.
But he used to get on with us in the 70s, and we'd talk the paranormal, and I can remember we'd be practicing looking at pictures of our shacks, and he'd never seen my shack, and I'd never published the picture anywhere, and he was reading it verbatim. It was amazing.
No shit.
I thought he was really? A real clairvoyant when I saw that. Anyway, it was pretty cool. We had a lot of fun. I don't know whether it was real or not, but we had fun nonetheless.
Well, it sounds pretty real. You know, I Marcy, God love her. She
puts up with
you. Oh, yeah, that too.
Just as Jane puts up with me.
Well, you know, it's a quote from President Truman. And you know what that saying is? Never kick a turd on a hot day.
Oh, Jesus. I don't know what you're going to get. All right, take it easy there, man. Don't choke to death.
No. That ain't gonna happen.
All right, Timmy.
All right, Mr.
It's
Pete.
Good to talk with you again. And
likewise.
We'll hear you on the air soon.
And, yep.
Continue this nonsense.
Yes, we shall continue this nonsense, because that's what life is, Pete. It's a bunch of friggin' nonsense. Okay, man. See you. Bye. Yeah. Bye-bye, man. See you later.
Us and find the pleasures of the journey to the center of the mind. Come along if you care. Come along if you dare. Take a ride to the land inside of your mind. Beyond the seas of thought, beyond the realm of what, across the streams of hopes and dreams where things are really not. Come along if you care. Come along if you dare. Take a ride to the land that's
An apple, you know, that's what's in the center of your mind. All that friggin' pulp, man.
I'm the kind of mind twitching.
to a loose JS. Yes. A loose JS. Can really rain on a wet dream, you know.
And Sister Ray.
Sister Mary Incarnita. Sister Mary Philomena. Sister Mary Rutabaga. Sister Mary Himalaya.
Yeah, I remember my math teacher, Sister Mary Hypotenuse. Yeah, in biology, it was Sister Mary Aorta. In Latin, Sister Mary Caesar. In gym class, it was Sister Mary Coach. Yeah. My shop nun was Sister Mary Black and Decker. And, of course, the principal, Sister Mary Herman Gorman. Yeah, I tell you. They don't make nun names like that no more.
Sister Mary. Sister Mary, Isabella, Sister Mary, Mozzarella.
They don't make nun names like that no more. No more cool nun names, that's for sure. Times have changed, yeah guys. Nuns use their real names today. Those old nun names, Sister Bob and Sister Ray. Yeah, where have you gone, nuns of yesteryear? Yeah, the assistant principal, Attila the nun. Yeah, Sister Mary Rasputin, I hope you haven't shaved your beard. Yeah, my anthropology nun, Sister Mary Bigfoot. My music teacher, Sister Mary Ocarina. Boy, she could play it all.
Yeah. Yes. Tunage right now from the Youpers. Crank this one up. It's got a lot of truth to it on Radio Timtron Worldwide.
If you think you hooked the right woman, blow a fart and see how she acts. If she starts to squirm, looks at you like you're a jerk. She's not a 10, toss her back. I was trying to snag me a beauty. I dropped a stinky one that made her cry. She choked on the smell, then told me to go to hell. I could care less that she didn't say goodbye. If she farts on the first date, she's a keeper. If she burps when she eats, she's a catch. If she farts under the sheets, makes you smell her feet, then she's a Youper 10, yeah, you betcha. A dream. If she likes to get half lit, yeah, loves to let him rip, then you got yourself a real Youper queen. If she farts on the first day, she's a keeper. If she burps when she eats, she's a catch. She farts under the sheets, makes you smell her feet, then she's a Youper 10, yeah, you betcha.
Yes, the Youpers.
Then she's a Youper 10.
From the upper Peters Peninsula of Michigan.
Then she's a Youper 10, yeah, you betcha.
Yes, indeed, the Youpers. Here it is.
I have a feeling so deep inside, whenever we're together, it just would hide. It's the tapeworm of love eating my heart out over you. Whenever we hold hands, I can feel it munching. Whenever we kiss, I can feel it lunching. The tapeworm of love is eating my heart out over you. I know I should get it up.
dripping when we embrace. My abdomen is slipping, the tapeworm of love is eating my heart out of our gals. Even when I sleep, I know it's never resting, because I dream of you. It keeps right on digesting, the tapeworm of love is eating my heart out over you.
Tapeworm of love. Oh.
See, that's mighty fine sitar playing the hot dog.
Yes, it is. Oh, it's so painful. Oh, right in the scrot, man. Well, valued shortwave listeners out there in radio land. This broadcast of Radio Timtron Worldwide must come to a screeching halt and a close. But fear not! On 7.490 is the Pirate Joe Radio Show, which, due to the long-haul skip at this time, can't hear it. But that's the way it is, you know, that's propagandagation. God, propaganda, man. A lot of it out there, that'd be a subject for another time. But we here at Radio Timtron Worldwide want to come up with a break from the usual mundane strife and mother rapings, father stabbings, and all that kind of thing. Speaking of which, Thanksgiving is around the corner, you know. And Yarlo Guthrow's classic piece, Yalis's Restaurant, used to be played on radio stations throughout the land. You know, might show up on BCQ, you never know, so you gotta keep your radio dial right here. So remember, friends, to control the world population, you gotta think before you bink, you know, I might be running out of time here. But you know, friends, there's still time, brother. There's still time. You know, in cruising YouTube to gather some tunes, there's lots of apocalyptic World War III is just around the corner videos. I don't know, to me, that's stirring the pot. We'll have discussion of that in a future broadcast of Radio Timtron Worldwide. Is it truth or is it fiction? Meanwhile, the penile thrust of Radio Timtron Worldwide is to forget about your woes and cares and just take it all in on a Saturday night. So do keep here, tuned in to WBCQ Monticello, Maine, USA. A member station of Farts! The First Amendment Radio Transmitting Society.